Josh, how are you surviving this Arctic apocalypse?
Man, I am not digging it. I'm not digging it.
Dude, Louisiana, this is unprecedented. We have had, what, 20-degree weather for like a week almost?
Yeah, it felt like, what, all the way down to 1, 2, 3, 5, 7 degrees.
And I actually had guys out working in that stuff, dude.
Yeah, for you guys that don't know, we're completely not set up or bred for this. It does not go well over here.
No. And the whole town, the entire state, Texas, the whole South.
Yeah. 2 days was fun. Now, we're on day 4. And the snow and the ice is just now starting to melt, and everybody is tired of it.
And, of course, everybody said, oh, it's going to refreeze tonight as well.
I don't want it to.
No, I'm done with it, man. Like, I'm tired of opening the door and seeing this nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. So what do we got here today, man?
Dude, Black Hawk Down.
Whoa, the Battle of Mogadishu.
Man, you've been wanting to do this one. I started looking into it. This is some cool stuff.
Guys, it is the 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like the 5th or 6th one on my dry erase board over here in the pod lab.
It was one of the OGs.
Yeah, so I've been wanting to do this one for several months now. We just got through our biggest episode yet with Apollo 13, and we're going to roll right along. We'll give you guys some great history. We're going to get into our first military battle, and we're going to cover one hell of a firefight. So get ready. I'm going to turn it over to Catfish. Guys, this is the Battle of Mogadishu.
Oh, man. So Somalia. That's where we're at right now. And the country is just a mess. And so in 91, the president was actually overthrown in Somalia.
Not good times, guys. No. Not good times.
And so, these rebels come in and literally took over by force and started running the country, disbanded all the military that was there. So it's just these wild guys.
Now, African rebels are the wildest. Their names are like Captain Chaos and Inspector Explosions and shit, man. These guys go crazy.
Well, the reason they go crazy is they're also hyped up.
What was it they were doing?
It's, what is it?
Cot.
Cot. That's the name of it. Cot. Yeah, it's, it's like meth almost, yeah, but it's instant.
It's an amphetamine that has a much quicker,
Absorption rate.
Yeah, the absorption rate is so much quicker than your average amphetamine.
Yeah, it's like, man, it's like putting some, you know, skull in your mouth or something. It's just instant. Just that nicotine hit is the same thing, man. It's just right there. So, I mean, they're all hyped up and all over the place. They literally overthrow this guy. So picture in our country if somebody literally just walked up and just said, you know what, no more military. I'm running the joint now. And that's what it was like for everybody there. And but, man, and so, like, this was, like, January of 91 when this went down.
Okay.
And
okay.
And when they took over, I mean, it's, they full pledge got over. But it was all craziness everywhere. So, in September of 91, that's where the fighting actually broke out. I mean, they're shooting people. They're doing stuff. But in September, you know, you give it a month, and that's when things started getting nasty. And that was right there, and it broke out, and it was in Mogadishu. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, that was perfect. Mogadishu.
I'm really surprised I got that right. There was over 20,000 people that got killed or injured during the end of that year.
Dang!
20,000, man. And all these little mini wars led to the destruction of pretty much all the, everything that was there. I mean, it shut the entire place down.
Place looked like a bomb went off everywhere.
It actually did. In the pictures, man.
Because bombs were going off,
yeah,
guys.
Did you look at the picture? I mean, it literally was just the whole town just nonstop.
I have looked through so many pictures, and not only am I going to put stuff on Facebook and Instagram, but I'm going to save some of the most gruesome pictures that we found for our Patreon account that we're actually getting launched and getting going. You guys, make sure to roll over and check in it. We're going to try to turn your head a little bit.
Yeah, so like the international community, the whole world starts sending in food supplies and just because, I mean, all their agriculture, everything's gone. The food's gone.
Yeah, people need help at this point.
Yeah, so they're sending in water and food and everything they can trying to save these people.
Bags of rice, flour, right, whatever.
Well, you got to think. These bad guys. And by the way, as a kid, did you always say bad guys playing video games and
of
stuff?
Of course,
like that?
It was the bad
guys. You're the
guys.
Good guys and they're bad guys.
Yeah.
Well, the bad guys started stealing the food from the people.
Because what happens? You control the food, you control the people.
Amen. That's where it's at. So now at this point, they have ended every bit of farming they had going on, any kind of food supply, and then they start stealing the supplies coming in from other countries.
See, these are real bad guys.
Yeah, I mean, these are the worst of the worst. It like 80% of the food never made it to the people.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's majority were starving. Bad. And so that's when everybody starts jumping in at this point. I mean, you lost like what is a 250,000 people or more to starvation during this. So you have like 30,000+ people dead, 20,000 people from the fight, from all the fighting. Then you add on top of that all these, you're talking massive amount of people. And that's when Operation Provide Relief happened. That was in August of 92, so about a year later.
Dude, they needed relief.
All that happened in 1 year. All those deaths happened within 1 year.
Africa's wild, man.
Yeah, well, you got to think, you have no government at this point. You literally just had these wildcats running around chewing on their, you know, little methamphetamine leaves.
Toting their AK, getting it down.
That's what I'm going to call it, is the methamphetamine leaves. And they're just running around and just acting crazy. I mean, shooting everybody in the streets.
Give me some cotton.
It was a rough place, man. And George W. Bush, they announced that the U.S. military transports would support multinational U.N. relief efforts. So they were going to bring pretty much the entire world was going to come together in U.N. and start making sure that people got their food.
All right.
And I think that's how we kind of started getting more heavily involved. I mean, these are bad guys, and we're going to come stop them. Yeah, they sent in 10 of these C-130 transport planes and over 400 people. They were deployed all over Mombasa, Kenya, and they're just airlifting and dropping stuff off all over the country.
Like they should be.
Right, because it's not just Somalia that's hurting either, man. It's like the whole area. I mean, it even stretches outside of Somalia.
Okay.
I mean, it is bad.
It was affecting the entire region, basically.
It was, the whole region. But you got to think, I mean, food transports from one place to the other.
Yeah.
I mean, and Somalia itself is right there along Silk Road. That's where stuff moves in and out. It's like cutting off your distribution route from Walmart. I mean, your truck going down the interstate, it's like going to another state and cutting off that transport. So, I mean, it's cutting everything out. Well, this didn't work.
What happened, man?
It simply didn't get food to people.
Oh, so the airdrops weren't enough.
Over 500,000 people dead at this point.
Wow.
Because they're trying to drop food everywhere. It just does not get to everybody. These rebels are all over the place taking the food from them.
Okay.
So over 500,000 people dead in a year.
Yeah, something's got to be done about these rebels.
Oh, they got to crack them down. So, well, that's why the U.S. kind of stepped in about the end of 92.
Okay. The end of 92.
That's right, man. And that's called Operation Restore Hope. And that's where crap hit the fan, and that's where we got boots on the ground.
Oh, dude, you got to tell us what happened. Yeah. Come on.
Oh, dude. Yeah, so, like, basically the Marines come in, firing guns. They take over the airport. They take over everything. And that airport becomes important later on. So don't forget the airport. But the Marines are there to save the day.
All right, so on March 3rd of 93, the UN Secretary General Boutros-Boulos-Ghali. I just love saying
that. I love that name.
Guy.
Say it again.
Boutros-Boulos-Ghali.
Oh, speak dirty to me.
He submitted his recommendation for transitioning from a UNITAF to UNISOM 2. Now, basically, that's talking about the levels of missions in play and the type of military engagement.
So he's wanting to shake things up a little bit.
Yeah. And the reason he did that was because UNITAF's presence and operations had created a positive impact on Somali's security system and had benefited the situation. But there was more that could be done. There was no police force. There was no real government. There was no army. There was no true infrastructure. And that's what the UNISOM 2 was authorized to do, was trying to establish a secure infrastructure for the country
right.
of Somalia
well,
itself.
You know, typically in war, that's what they do. When you go over, if a place is kind of rebellious and just going crazy, you go in and you try to hope that they can actually end up running the thing themselves. They can manage it themselves. And that's what he was wanting to do.
Yeah. So they had a conference, and that conference was called the National Reconciliation Conference, and it was held in Somalia. And it was held on March 15th of 93. Now, a part of about 15 different parties that were major players within Somalia agreed to these terms that were set out to try and bring peace and democracy to the region. But it only took about a month, and things started to go downhill very quickly.
Nothing's working out the way it's supposed to in this place.
Yes, and a particular faction, Mohamed Farah Adid's faction, was not going to cooperate, and this was becoming a major problem. At that time, Adid began to broadcast anti-United Nations propaganda, and he was using Radio Mogadishu to make this happen. Now, Lieutenant General Savek Beer, he ordered the radio station shut down in an attempt to stop what was going to turn into a rebellion, so to speak. Civilian spies actually went through UNISOM's headquarters, and they were uncovering the plan of the United Nations. So they were actually...
Whoa, they knew ahead of time what they were doing. No.
African militia spies were getting the upper hand on the United Nations plan. Think about that for Captain Chaos, man. And Inspector Explosions.
I am the captain now.
Yeah, they are the captain now. So on June 5th of 93, Adid ordered his militia to attack a Pakistani force that had been tasked with the inspections of arms caches located throughout Mogadishu, specifically at the radio station. And the result of this attack was 24 dead and 57 wounded Pakistani troops, as well as one wounded Italian, and I believe it was about three other American soldiers that were involved in this that were also wounded. On June 6th of 93, the UN Security Council passed what was to be known as Resolution 837, which called for the arrest of the people that were responsible of the death of the UN peacekeepers.
Yeah. Including the fact that there's literally 500,000 or more people dead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just horrible. So they're deciding that they're going to go after who did it. On June 12th, U.S. troops started attacking targets in Mogadishu, and a campaign that lasted from June 16th on to June 17th, Admiral Jonathan Howe issued a $25,000 bounty for the information leading to Adid's arrest, but he was never captured.
Of course not.
Yeah, and Howe also requested a rescue force come in after the Pakistani's death. So moving on to July 12th of 93, a U.S.-led operation led to the event known as Bloody Monday. Now, what it was part of the campaign to find or kill Adid. And during that time, American forces attacked a house in Mogadishu after an undercover agent tipped them off that Adid would be there and that he was having a meeting with other leaders. So at 10:18 in the morning, American Cobra attack helicopters launched missiles that were known as tow missiles and fired 20-millimeter caliber cannons at the structure.
They lit that place up.
Yes, they were trying to level it. The people that were living in the house and the other inhabitants is disputed. They're kind of, some people saying they were just living there, other people saying that those that were in the attack were there for another reason. And American forces claim that it was the meeting of a war council so that the American mission was a success. Now, according to American war correspondent Scott Peterson, a group, not the other Scott Peterson, just this Scott Peterson, a group of Somali elders gathered at the house and they were trying to discuss a way to make peace to end the violence between the United Nations and the Somali militia.
So there was a debate if it was bad intel or not and then a cover-up.
Absolutely. Now, according to a Somali survivor, the American ground troops killed 15 survivors at close range with pistols. Now,
whoa.
If you know anything about your average military and like infantry operation and the way they're done, most soldiers don't really have sidearms. And to think that they were all executed at close range by average infantrymen with pistols seems extremely far-fetched to me. Now, according to the International Committee of the Red Cross, there were 54 dead Somalis and 161 wounded during that aerial strike, with Somali forces claiming even more casualties and the American forces claiming less casualties. So it's a real big he said, she said thing going on right now. Unfortunately, Adid was not among the casualties, and he may not even have been present.
That's the key phrase.
The information by the undercover operative could not have been correct. We're not sure. On August of 1993, Adid's militia detonated a remote-controlled bomb, and they detonated it against a U.S. military vehicle, and it killed four soldiers.
Oh.
Just 2 weeks later, they bombed again, and they injured seven more U.S. soldiers. So at this time, President Bill Clinton approved the proposal to deploy a task force composed of not only United States Army Rangers, but also Special Forces, like with the Delta units.
And you know, whatnot. And I had seen a documentary, and it was on one of the Rangers that was there, and he was talking about the pressure that the Clinton administration was putting on them to capture this guy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just him. It was also the guys below him going up the pyramid, going up the, you know, catching all the ones that worked for him. But, like, the dude, they were, the administration was on those Rangers to get these guys.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you an idea of the type of force that we were rolling in with. There was the B Company 3rd Battalion of the 75th Ranger Regiment. There was the C Squadron of the 1st Special Forces Operation Detachment Delta Division. There was a deployment package of 16 helicopters from the 1st Battalion 160 Special Operations Aviation Regiment. And they had Black Hawk helicopters and MH-6 Little Birds. There were also Navy SEALs from the Naval Special Warfare Development Group, commonly known as DEVGRU. And for you guys that don't know, DEVGRU, they're the ones that really test and train the most high-speed type stuff, the best weapons, the experimental stuff. That's what comes from the DEVGRU.
I mean, they're pulling in the best of the best.
Yeah. And finally, Air Force Pararescue Men and Combat Controllers. Now, Air Force Pararescue Men are really, really badass paramedics.
Yeah, and but you know, this sounds like a lot when you first look over it. I'm sitting here listening to you, and it sounds like it's a lot, but you're going against thousands and thousands of people on their home turf.
Yeah.
Well-armed.
And our largest division is going to be our 75th Ranger Regiment with just 400 soldiers.
That's what I'm getting at. I mean, and that's what, when you see further on in the story, when we start seeing these casualty numbers and we see the injured numbers, we are some badasses.
Yeah. Now, right before everything really begins to happen, on the 25th of September, just a week before the battle, guys, Adid's supporters used an RPG to shoot down a Black Hawk helicopter, and that happened near the port of Mogadishu. It had been assigned to the 101st Airborne Division. That's the Screaming Eagles.
That's some badasses.
And all three crew members were killed upon impact. Mm. It was the first time that a helicopter went down within Mogadishu, and the event was a big psychological victory for the African militia.
Oh, yeah.
Began to pump them up.
Yeah. Well, they're already hyped up anyway on their freaking methamphetamine leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's not meth.
We should talk a little bit, I guess, about the Somali forces.
What are we going up against?
Yeah. The numbers aren't 100% known, but between 2,000 and 4,000 regular faction members of the militia were believed to have been present.
And our biggest was 400.
Yeah. So it's what, 100 to 1 at some point? Yeah. Is that how it, no.
Yeah, it's about
10 to 1. Guys, I didn't math. Not at all.
Not the biggest strong point.
Algebra 1 took me 2 years to get through. We're not going to go there. But there was between 2 and 4,000 members there. They were largely from the Habar Gadir Hawaji clan.
Say that 10 times fast.
I ain't saying it anymore. Now, they were the Somali National Alliance was formed on August 14th of 92. It began as the United Somali Congress under Adid's leadership. But at the time of the operation, the SNA was composed mostly of Colonel Omar Guess's Somali Patriotic Movement and the Somali Democratic Movement. So it really seemed like a couple of these factions were starting to come together.
And starting to organize a little bit.
Possibly use the UN and the American presence as a sort of a rally against, you know, way to bring themselves together.
Yeah. Yeah, so October of 93, Special Operation Forces. They consisted of the Bravo Company 3rd Battalion, the 75th Ranger Regiment, and the 1st Special Forces Operational Detachment Delta, and the 160th Aviation Battalion.
Nice.
So it's a bunch of guys coming in, and these are like the top of the top.
Yeah, for those that don't know, when America sends the Rangers in, that's when they want to kick someone's ass, and they want the rest of the world to know that they kicked your ass.
One of the Rangers that was there, he literally said, our job and what we're good at is kicking the door in.
Yeah.
And making it, get the bad guys out, take care of them.
Yeah. So tell us about this plan, man.
Oh, man. So the plan, they was going to bring in the Delta operators, and they would actually assault the target building using these Little Bird helicopters. So they'd come in flying with helicopters, boom, 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 and secure the targets inside the building.
Okay.
So a team of guys would actually fast rope down from a hovering Black Hawk, from multiple Black Ops. So multiple helicopters, and these guys are scaling down on ropes.
Dude, that's so sweet.
You would get a thing. So here's the thing, though. The buildings, the streets were so narrow that these helicopters couldn't even land all the way.
Oh, man.
So they're having to jump out of these helicopters above the building levels. So some of these buildings, 4 or 5 stories tall. You're talking 50, 60 foot.
Nah.
Yeah, no, that was part where I would have been like, I don't know about this. And then
circle around.
Yeah, so while they're dropping down from these Blackhawks, the Rangers, not the Ford Rangers, but the Rangers actually create a four-corner defense. So while they're dropping from the helicopters from like 60 foot up, scaling down these ropes, like total Chuck Norris badasses.
They got to be looking around.
The Rangers, the Rangers are actually kicking in doors and going building to building and clearing it and making it where you can have a defense on all sides so nobody can sneak up on these guys coming out of these helicopters.
Nice.
That's right.
Yeah. So a column of 9 Humvees and 3 M939 5-ton trucks came in, or they were planning to come in, and they would arrive at the building to take the entire assault team and their prisoners back to the base, which was actually just a converted airport.
Right. So, yeah, so everybody that scaled down out of the Blackhawks, everybody that the Rangers kicking in the doors could all hop in these Humvees.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you a problem with this, though.
What?
Those Humvees had no armor. Zero armor. This is before they actually, the U.S. now has started armoring all the armor plating, all the Humvees. At this point, it was literally like taking your pickup and going to war.
So with all of this planning and everything in place, they estimated the entire operation was supposed to take roughly half an hour. Just 30 minutes.
Yeah, I think somebody undershot that just a little bit.
Just by a little bit. Now, the ground extraction convoy was supposed to be able to make it to where the captive and the targets were a few minutes after the operation had commenced, but it was going to run into delays. Somali citizens and other local militiamen began to form barricades down the streets, and they would use wrecked vehicles, debris, I mean, whatever they could. They would stack up tires and set them on fire, you know, anything to block the convoy.
Ex-wives, whatever they
can cross. Yeah, I'd put like 10 of them down. Y'all just go ahead. Now, Adid's militiamen, they had megaphones, and they were shouting to everybody, come out and defend your homes.
This is the craziest thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. Now, at 1350, which would be 1:30. Yeah,
1:50.
Right before 2 o'clock. Task Force Ranger, they came in, they received intelligence of Salad's location, okay? Now, the soldiers, the vehicle convoys, and the helicopters had all been on high alert. They're ready to go, and they're waiting to hear one word. That word is Irene. That's the code Irene. Word for everything to pop off and for them to begin the assault.
That's amazing.
Yes. So, at 1542...
Be 3:42.
Yeah, so roughly just under 2 hours from when we first began to talk about this, the MH6 assault Little Birds that were carrying Delta operators hit that target. So now they're on it. The mission has begun. The dust got so bad that one of the helicopters couldn't land where he wanted to. He actually had to circle around and get out of the vision of the dust cloud so he could safely bring their operators down.
Because like I said, all the buildings are super, super tight together.
Yeah, yeah. Now, next, the 2 Black Hawk helicopters that were carrying the 2nd Delta assault team, led by Captain Austin S. Miller, they came into position and they made their teams and they dropped them down. And as the Ranger Chalks prepared to fast rope onto the corners of the buildings, one of them, carried by Blackhawk's designation Super 67, was accidentally put north of the intended point. So you've got one helicopter who couldn't land because of the dust being too far out, another helicopter who got pushed too far north by accident, and the last chalk 4, the last group that was supposed to come down to their planned position, but at this time already, the ground fire and the gunfire that was going off was so intense that they could not make it to their rally point.
So they're scattered.
Yeah.
So where they were actually supposed to target one specific area, they're scattered over this whole city.
Not only that, but there was no ground support for the helicopters now.
Right, because they're all over the place. Yeah.
So the air support, which a lot of times you think of being able to cover the ground, doesn't have the return of the ground covering them for things like explosives. And
you're low flying at this point, and just you have rounds firing off at you, RPGs going off. I mean,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do.
So the ground convoy, the third part of this, arrives about 10 minutes later, and they made it to the Olympic Hotel, okay? And that was a target building. They begin to wait for the Rangers and for the Delta Force to complete their mission. Their main job was going to be extraction at this point. Now, during the operation's first few moments, Private First Class Todd Blackburn fell while he was fast roping from Super 67.
And I think it was like 60 foot, if I'm right.
Somewhere between 60 and 70 foot. I've read around 21 meters or so. Jeez. And he fell straight down. Blackburn suffered several head injuries and actually had to be evac'd out by the column of Humvees. So now the Humvees are not only tasked with extracting the
bad guys.
The Delta Squad and the Rangers that right. are getting the targets, but now they've got a wounded Ranger himself that needs to be taken care of.
Immediately.
Yes.
And they have to get him to the airport, which is where they set up their little temporary base.
Now, it should be saying that, dude, he made it back, okay? But unfortunately, Sergeant Dominic Pia, who was assigned to one of the Humvees, was killed instantly when he was shot in the head. Now, the Humvee was in such bad shape that when the whole column of Humvees made it back in, there were bullet holes everywhere, and there was literally smoke and blood. I mean, you could just tell.
Yeah, tires shot out the whole nine yards. Yeah. I mean, these things are tin cans. Yeah. They're moving tin cans is what they are.
Yeah, military grade, guys, when y'all hear that and hear military specs, you
remember
should
this story.
You should really think twice.
Yeah, remember this story when you hear that. But yeah, no, they were described by the Rangers as just being tin cans with them inside of it.
Oh, man.
And just rounds firing off all the way around them. Guys getting, I mean, my goodness, dude.
So, guys, it's about to get even worse for our team of operators.
Jeez, how can it get worse than that?
Well, let's take a quick break. Hear a word from our sponsor, and I'll tell you how. At about 16:20, which would have been about 4:20 p.m., one of the Blackhawks, which was designated as Super 61, was piloted by Cliff Elvis Wolcott and CW3 Donovan Bull Briley. Now, it was shot down with an RPG. Now, the Africans, they're pretty good shots with RPGs. Both pilots were killed in the crash, and there were two crew chiefs who were also on board. That was Sergeant Ray Dowdy and Staff Sergeant Charlie Warren. They were both wounded really bad. Staff Sergeant Daniel Bush and Sergeant Jim Smith, who were both Delta snipers, they survived the crash, and they actually began to defend their fallen comrades at the crash site.
Trying not to let people get to them.
Yeah. Now, an MH-6 designated as Star 41 and was piloted by Carl Mayer and Keith Jones landed nearby. Jones left the helicopter and he began to carry Bush to safety of the other helicopter while Mayer provided cover fire from the cockpit. And he was being ordered.
He stayed behind and literally it was just while they're running, he just pop, 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 pop.
And he was being told to lift off. And while his co-pilot was gone rescuing, he was being told to leave.
And he's like, no.
No, he's out shooting.
He goes, that's my boy.
Yeah, and he's like, no,
I got you, Josh.
Yet.
I would have done it for you, man.
He's not leaving yet. So at that time, Mayer nearly hit Chalk One's lieutenant, who was Tom DiTommaso. Tom DiTommaso was his name. And he was with the Rangers and the Delta operators who were en route to secure the site. So the pilot is firing as the Rangers are coming in to help with this crashed helicopter.
What is it? Is he using like, is it like a handgun, a rifle, or is he actually using the copters?
More than likely he's using the MP5.
Right.
Yeah, he's not. These particular types of helicopters don't have guns like you're thinking about a pilot.
They're
operating.
More of getting in and out.
A crew chief on these planes is who's actually going to be operating the machine gun on the side. And
one of his main tasks
is with providing safety for the helicopter and the rest of the crew itself. And he's going to
do
that
more,
with machine gun fire.
Right, okay. So it's more for more of an offensive get the heck out of here than it is to actually,
Yeah. Jones and Mayer evacuated Bush and Smith. So things are starting to look up a little bit. But Bush later died of his injuries, and he was shot 4 times while defending his fellow soldiers.
What a badass dude, man.
So then a combat search and rescue team, who was led by a Delta Captain Bill J. Coltrup and also Air Force Master Sergeant Scott C. Fales, accompanied by Air Force Technician Sergeant Timothy A. Wilkinson. Now, they were able to fast rope down to the crash site of Super 61, despite their own helicopter being hit by another RPG.
Okay, I have an idea. For the pod lab, we need a wall in here designated Wall of Badasses.
Yeah.
When we come across a badass on one of our podcasts, and we're doing this, we need to write their name down and put their picture up.
I am so down for that. So, helicopter designation Super 68, that was piloted by Dan Gelata, I believe, and Major Herb Rodriguez, despite their damage, they actually made it back to the base. So, total badasses all the way around. Now, the combat search and rescue team found both pilots dead and 2 wounded soldiers inside the crashed helicopter. Now, despite intense fire, the team moved the wounded to a nearby rally point where they built a makeshift shelter using plates and Kevlar armor from Super 61's wreckage. So they were taking crashed helicopter parts and, like, blocking up doors and windows.
In the middle of a firefight.
In the firefight to block themselves in so that the pararescue men could begin to work and treat the wounded soldiers. Fucking calm under fire, man. That's some thinking right there. Now, one thing that did not work in their favor were the communications through all this. See, the assault team and the ground team, they waited for about 20 minutes to receive orders and begin to move. And the problem was that both units thought that they were supposed to hear from the other unit first. So they're hunkered down, confused, not knowing what to do. And both teams are believing that they should be hearing from them. And they haven't, so they're starting to get worried and whatnot.
Yeah, so during this wait, a second Black Hawk helicopter, it was Super 64. They were shot down by an RPG at around 1640, so like 440 or so.
So about 20 minutes after the first Black Hawk went down.
That's right. And most of the assault team went to the first crash site to rescue, you know, for a rescue operation. Yeah. But once they got to the crash site, like 90 Rangers and Delta Force operators ended up taking a heavy fire.
Yeah, you don't hear that in the movie. There was like 15 to 17 guys.
Right. 90 guys taking fire from all around them, all corners.
That's the reality of the situation. That's right. Guys, I mean, think about how intense that had to be.
Oh, yeah, dude. And they had air support. They had everything, but they got trapped for the entire night.
The whole night?
The whole night.
Oh, man, no way.
Well, I think this whole thing took like 18 hours.
It did, didn't it?
And so, I mean, in the movie, it looks like it's being wham, bam, whatever. But this is 18 hours of constant fighting that's going on.
So, 2 Delta snipers, Master Sergeant Gary Gordon and Sergeant First Class Randy Sugart, were at the second crash site, okay? And they were inserted by Helicopter Super 62. Now, their first 2 requests were to be inserted, and they were denied. And finally, after keeping, you know, bugging them for permission, they were finally granted the right to go down.
Right. Well, the 90 Rangers and the Delta Force operators, they actually had, if I'm right, they took commandeered some houses around them to kind of make a little temporary thing.
Yeah.
So they're waiting for help, though.
Yeah. Now, these 2 snipers inflicted heavy casualties on the mob that was approaching, okay?
So, oh, my God.
Yeah, and while that time, Super 62 was keeping up their fire support from above.
Have you ever seen the original Frankenstein?
Oh, yeah.
Like, with the whole pitchforks and the torches? Yeah. That's what I picture, except for it was a lot of guns and everything else.
Yeah.
But it's literally just a mob coming down the street, coming after it.
So while Super 62 was above them keeping fire support, they got struck by an RPG, another one, but they managed to move out of the frame and land at a port safely. So they got it out of
danger. There is no safe when it comes to this stuff.
Hey, we had at least like half a Mogadishu.
But they were away from the mob. They were away from the craziness, at least when they landed.
Yeah. When Gordon was killed, Sugar picked up Gordon's rifle and gave it to Durant. Now, Sugar went back to the helicopter's nose and held off the mob for another 10 minutes before, sadly, he was killed. Mm. Then the Somali militiamen overran the crash site and killed everyone but Durant. He was beaten very, very badly, almost to the point of death. But other militiamen came in and actually decided to keep him as a prisoner. Because remember, what started all this was our Delta operators going in and going to snatch two of the deeds men. So they're thinking, now we've got a bargaining chip.
Is this the scene like on CNN and stuff we remember seeing as a kid where they were dragging him through the street?
Yes, yes.
That was him. Yes. My goodness.
Now, for their actions, Gordon and Sugar were posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. And that was the first time it had been awarded to anyone since the Vietnam War. So that's a big deal. There were repeated attempts by the Somalis to amass a force and to take on the Americans during these firefights. But there were strafing runs that was done throughout the night by these Little Bird helicopters. And was actually, they were the only helicopters who were equipped with proper night vision to make these runs.
And the guns. Yeah.
Okay. And they kept the militia from basically forming and being able to surround and overtake the Rangers. Jesus. Who had, you know, they walled themselves up with Kevlar from the crash site, you know, and were taking care of the wounded and holding everything off for the night. Now, that morning, the relief convoy arrives.
Good.
And, yeah, you've got to think how much relief that has got to be.
Dude, what? Oh, my gosh, man.
Now, it should be said that it's not just the Americans. There were Malaysian and Pakistani forces along with the American troops that went in to get them. Now, there was no contingency planning or no real coordination with the UN forces and the American forces. So this made the recovery and the rescue operation so much more complicated. But they did come together and make things happen.
All right, that's what I was about to say, man. It's literally, this is happening. We got to get in the fight. We have to get in there and get these guys out.
And it was a huge convoy. When it finally made its way into the heart of the city, it consisted of more than 100 UN vehicles, including Malaysian forces, German-made Condor APCs. Now, Condor APCs, which that stands for Armored Personnel Carrier, they're badass
vehicles. Yeah, they can take some hits.
Yeah. There were also 4 Pakistani tanks and American Humvees and several M939 5-ton flatbed trucks. This 2-mile-long convoy was supported by several other Black Hawk helicopters, Cobra helicopters that were from the 10th Mountain Division. Like, there was everything. Now, meanwhile, the Task Force Rangers Little Birds, that was the H6s, the H6J Little Birds, they were flying up ahead, and they were providing the air force and the cover for this 2-mile-long convoy.
That's crazy. You know what this reminds me of? World War II, an engineer was looking at the planes as they made it back. Well, wherever they were shot at when they would land, they would try to put extra armor in those spots where they got shot at, thinking, this is where, you know, okay, well, this is where people shoot at them at.
Yeah.
Now, and this one guy walks up, and he goes, hey, how about you put armor where there was not bullet holes? Because obviously that's what took the other ones down. They didn't make it back.
Yeah.
So this whole thing reminds me of that.
Now, you should be warned that this was an extremely determined convoy. And because of that, they did their best to stay on track, to not get slowed down. And they sustained heavy casualties, including several people that died during it. There was even a Malaysian soldier that died when an RPG hit his armored personnel carrier.
Oh, my God.
So their RPGs are still freaking everywhere. They must have like a RPGs R Us over there.
Yeah.
Like, you just get them, buy two, get one free type shit.
I mean, they're just pedal, you know, they're just foot to the floor and just gunfire and RPGs going off the whole time on them.
So this whole battle, like Catfish said, was roughly 18 hours. And it was over by 6:30 on Monday morning, October 4th. The U.S. forces were finally evacuated to the U.N. base by the convoy. And while they were leaving the crash site, a group of Rangers and Delta operators led by Staff Sergeant John R. Dykus realized that there was not going to be enough room in the APCs to carry everyone back.
This is where it gets a bit crazy and a bit lit.
So they had to freaking walk beside the armored personnel carriers and this convoy all the way back to base. And this is what's been referred to as the Mogadishu Mile. And this had to have been crazy. These guys were just exhausted, you know?
Well, you got to think, also, man, and the base is actually, if I'm right, it's what they're calling a base, was just that airport that they commandeered that we spoke about in the beginning. But they didn't have enough room inside of these APCs. They actually stuck the dead on the roof of them.
Man,
and it was extra protection. It's crazy to think about that. They describe blood running down the side of the APCs, the UN APCs were white, had black lettering on them, and literally had blood running all down the side. And then the wounded were in the back. And like you said, these other guys were walking beside this.
Yeah, all in all, 19 U.S. soldiers were killed in action during the battle or right after, with another 73 wounded during the action.
Which those numbers, considering what they were up against, I find amazing. Yeah.
Somali casualties were heavy, and with an estimate of fatalities ranging from a little over 300 to close to 2,000 combatants.
That's it.
They were a mixture of militia and civilians who were just along for the party, I guess, you know?
Oh, yeah. And then you got to think on their part, man, when all this is said and done, you don't want to be the one that goes, yeah, I lost 2,000 of my men. So when you do your count, you're going to tell them the lowest number you possibly can, because you also don't want to lose the morale. So you can't be like, yeah, we lost 2,000 people going up against a couple hundred.
So now we're going to take the time and do our best to list the soldiers that lost their lives during the battle for Mogadishu. That's going to be Master Sergeant Gary Ivan Gordon, Sergeant First Class Randy Sugar, Staff Sergeant Daniel Darrell Bush, Sergeant First Class Earl Robert Fillmore Jr., Master Sergeant Timothy Lynn Martin, Sergeant First Class Matthew Loren Ryerson, Corporal James Jamie E. Smith, Specialist James M. Cavaco, Sergeant James Casey Joyce, Corporal Richard Alphabet W. Kowalski Jr., Sergeant Dominic M. Pia, Sergeant Lorenzo M. Ruiz, Staff Sergeant William Wild Bill David Cleveland Jr., Staff Sergeant Thomas Tommy J. Field, CW4 Raymond Ironman Alex Frank, CW3 Clifton Elvis P. Wolcutt, CW3 Donovan Bull Lee Briley, Sergeant Cornell Lamont Houston Sr., and finally PFC Private First Class James Henry Martin Jr.
Yeah, Sergeant Houston Sr. actually was killed trying to save a Malaysian soldier. I mean, that's how much these guys cared about each other. You're not even from the same country, but y'all are in the same fight together, and he gave his life.
Yeah. Now, Ambassador Robert B. Oakley, who was the U.S. Special Representative to Somali, wrapped up this with a quote, and Daniel said it best earlier while we were practicing, so I'm going to turn it back over to him and let you guys hear Robert B. Oakley's words through the voice of my buddy Daniel.
My own personal estimate is that there must have been 1,500 to 2,000 Somalis killed and wounded that day. Because that battle was a true battle, and the Americans and those who come to their rescue were being shot at from all sides, a deliberate war battle, if you will, and on the part of the Somalis. And women and children were being used as shields, in some cases women and children actually firing weapons, and were coming from all sides. Sort of a rabbit warren of huts, houses, alleys, and twisting of turning streets, so those who were there trying to defend themselves were shooting back in all directions. Helicopter gunships were being used, as was all sorts of automatic weapons on the ground by the U.S. and the United Nations. The Somalis, by the large, using automatic rifles, grenade launchers, and it was a very nasty fight. As intense as almost any battle you would find.
Great job, buddy. Great job.
Man, I try to give a little bit of credit. That's something else. Just that one phrase summarized this entire thing we just did.
It did a good job, guys. That was the Battle of Mogadishu, also known as Black Hawk Down. Another fun episode in the books, guys. If you like what you heard, make sure to follow us on Facebook, Lost in Thought, Instagram at Stay Lost in Thought, YouTube at Lost in Thought Media, or send us an email at litpodcasting@gmail.com. Guys, I'm Josh.
I'm Daniel.
Remember, Tolkien once wrote, "Not all who wander are lost." Till next time, stay lit.
First time, every time.
Ha ha.
Forces.